Our NHS. By Rookwood. Of all the institutions I have observed and indeed commented on, the NHS is probably the most frustrating one to portray in simple terms. The UK's largest employer, with approaching 1.6 million staff, it dwarfs both Tesco and the Compass Group combined. Here lies the first clear indication why the NHS is not the innocent, benevolent organisation that it is made out to be. Sure as eggs are eggs, those 1.6 million employees will not all be nurses, doctors, theatre staff or indeed care workers of any stripe or colour. In terms of logistics and the supply chain, it is indeed a heavyweight, which to a small degree, accounts for the top-heavy burden of administrators, support staff, political apparatchiks and bureaucrats that clearly dominate the organization. Generations of mismanagement and underfunding left the door wide open for widespread corporate corruption beneath the guise of renewed funding via the discredited public finance initiative, which if not criminal, is so drenched in usury and exploitation, no sensible individual would ever contemplate signing such a warped agreement. And I haven't even started yet on the satellite organizations that feed off the galvanized tit of health outsourcing. Few, if really pressed, would disagree with the core principle that the NHS was built upon. Quality healthcare, free at the point of delivery, from the cradle to the grave, is not only an attractive proposition, it is a highly moral one for a civilized nation. Except that once you start examining this patently obvious soundbite and place it under the microscope, this statement is more suited to the erstwhile days of the social contract, where the individual citizen could expect a reasonable quid pro quo for diligence, hard work and contributing to the growing centralized tax pot. The cracks are now definitely beginning to show in this model, with the NHS, pre-COVID, annual budget reaching £130 billion against a national insurance income of £150 billion, with an additional £210 billion being spent on welfare. So even at first glance, the welfare state outstrips the taxable income originally designated for citizen care by £190 billion. No doubt this is covered with government debt, but any debt incurs an additional cost, be it interest or an additional tax burden on the next generations. The magic money tree is clearly in action here, and any suggestion that this money is free is an insult to the intelligence. John Q. taxpayer will be paying dearly, as will his sons, daughters and indeed great-grandchildren, for this extravagance. The next glaring hole in the above argument is the suggestion that the NHS provides quality healthcare. My personal experience is that it is extremely variable, from excellent to appalling. As a child, I spent many weeks in hospital at various stages of my pre-adult life, and I still have nightmares even now surrounding some of the treatment I received. While pediatric care has moved on in many ways since the 60s, I would still have a good case to sue the organization for malpractice, something that I am loath to do on moral grounds, despite my ongoing and absolute terror of hospitals. Being locked in a dark windowless toilet for hours for being a scared, traumatized child, leaves deep, unhealed scars. That said, without the care of the medical profession, I would be 6 foot under pushing up daisies. Numerous, almost fatal, asthma attacks and significant postnatal care as I was a significantly premature baby, £2 1 ounce, are a testament to the healthcare service at its best. Being born that weight in the early 60s, my chances of survival were slim, but nowadays the opposite is true. Technology and best practice have seen to that. Then of course there are the ongoing NHS scandals, which blight individuals and communities, depending on exactly what form they take. Naturally, they are quickly and quietly forgotten about, despite being the part of the ongoing tapestry of a highly dysfunctional and mostly unaccountable, left-leaning, organization. As far as general practitioner care is concerned, this too is a lottery. I have had everything from the totally dismissive to the genuinely compassionate. If you suffer from a condition that is not easily treated with drugs from the latest Big Pharma sales catalog or it is of an unknown origin, forget about it. GPs are loath to refer you to a specialist unless you really push for it, and if your blood test does not show what they are immediately looking for, much navel gazing and head scratching will follow. Myself, my daughter, close friends and my mother-in-law have all been prescribed drugs that were clearly contraindicated, and it wasn't until challenged that they were changed. In some cases, this was dangerously so, and could have easily ended in a fatality. One prescription caused a friend to pass out and fall downstairs and split their head open. It was really amusing to catch one GP out looking up drug information on Google, despite being perpetually told that the internet doesn't make a good physician. Clearly they had lost their copy of the British National Formulary, the United Kingdom Pharmaceutical Reference Book. Their sales mentor from Big Pharma will not be best pleased. Concerning the cradle to the grave part, I hardly need to illustrate the complete and total contempt I hold for that soundbite. Countless pensioners being herded into care homes, often being forced to sell their home over their head to cover the exorbitant costs of this cartel, is not care, it is people farming. Taking into account the biggest cost, salaries, care workers are amongst the poorest paid and poorly treated employees in the UK. The rest is sheer profit, for the average care home charges £3,000 per month, more if intensive nursing care is required. By all means, if the patient has no next of kin, I can see no moral difficulty in placing a charge on the property and allowing the individual to live there until they die and then recouping some of the healthcare cost. After all, unless the property was left to the local cat and dog home, the exchequer would have grabbed it anyway. Where there are living relatives that would benefit for such an inheritance though, it is just sheer greed on the part of the system once we take into account the amount the average hard-working individual has paid in taxes over their lifetime. This is doubly offensive where an individual was living in social housing, scrimped and saved to pay a mortgage on the property under the right to buy, for all of it to be returned to the state upon their death. One area of reform that is desperately needed in this country is our inheritance tax laws, which vomit all over the natural justice of being able to give your children, or indeed others that have looked after you in your dotage, a decent legacy. We then wonder why social mobility has ground to a halt and people do not have any incentive other than to live off the state. The excuse is always made that we are living longer, and the overall cost of healthcare for an individual has risen inexorably due to such medical advances as hip transplants, new corneas, etc. This raises the specter of where does essential emergency healthcare end and quality of life treatment start. The same argument could be said of many treatments, including some the more exotic cancer and genetic therapies, sometimes costing hundreds of thousands of pounds. We are frequently bombarded with the unfairness of a system where individuals have to institute a fundraiser as the National Institute for Health and Care Excellence, NICE, have denied treatment due to excessive cost, postcode lottery or poor drug efficacy. Apart from the fact that a government has the sheer cynical audacity of effectively calling a death panel NICE, this is a dangerous precedent, as we have recently discovered. For once healthcare becomes the habitat of politicians and bean counters, you can be guaranteed they will rig the system to not only line their pockets, but to pursue a much darker agenda. Being a child who had to wear uncomfortable wire-framed NHS spectacles from an early age, I have ended up with ears like an African elephant. Mr. Rumbolden, are you being served? Doesn't come near in a Dumbo ears competition with yours truly. The number of times as a child I was offered an operation to have these pinned back or some other minor cosmetic surgery, I won't dox myself by elucidating further, I found highly amusing but troubling at the same time. Such operations I consider desperately frivolous, and really struggle with the myriad of non-essential operations, some quite invasive and potentially life-threatening, that are carried out on a regular basis. I'll leave the reader to come to their own conclusions as to what they consider these are, but state-sponsored abortion I find particularly abhorrent. I suppose the rationale is if you take into account the long-term welfare costs of a single mother, it makes sense. Using that same logic, Anyone sent to prison should be immediately executed as well. And let's not forget those with long-term disabilities, just put them up against the wall and shoot them, it will be much cheaper in the long run. The problem is that it is gradually being revealed that this indeed is the opinion of a certain small, hardcore coterie of powerful interests, cloaking their eugenic and murderous intent with the fragrant bullshit of saving the planet. They are determined to reduce the population by as much as they can possibly get away with. "We are overpopulated," they cry and simper, yet if I wandered around to their house and put a 9mm round square between their eyes to help them with their cause, I would be the bad guy. If the truth be known, this language is code for "we are overpopulated with the wrong type of people." It is no accident that the phrase "useless eaters" was allegedly coined by a Nazi doctor in the death camps. The whole concept of eugenics, the modeling of the population either by only allowing a certain elite group to breed, and or killing the weak and disabled, is nothing new. Countless babies have met their end having their heads dashed upon the rocks since both Roman and Greek times. Irrespective of the mounting number of casualties that will arise out of this hellish vaccination and lockdown campaign, one thing is crystal clear. Our NHS has now become so totally and utterly politicized that it is beyond any form of sensible moral or ethical accountability. Quango upon quango, trust upon trust, committee upon committee, manager upon manager. Any attempt to get justice for the hundreds, if not thousands, of elderly folk who have died alone without a hug or an embrace from their loved ones will be quietly buried as systemic failure and is an utter abomination. I know of no individual that would not want to be beside a dying loved one, COVID or no COVID. That is love. Love doesn't give a shit whether it will catch the COVID or not. Love is self-sacrificial, it does not count the cost. Love realizes there is much more to our existence than any economic reality, as testified by the many cases of terminally ill patients, my adopted father included, who hung on against all odds until all the family were gathered by his bedside before he passed away. To deprive any patient of such a final demonstration of care is as brutal and disrespectful to humanity as the bone crusher found at the other end of the crematorium furnace. There are those in the NHS who will totally agree with me here. There will be those that will dismiss my words as pure emotionalism, and say I am unbalanced. I care not. It seems that the NHS lost the plot a very long time ago, and is now merely the political arm of the state. It is willing to carry out any policy, no matter how closely tied to eugenics, provided the money and kudos keeps rolling in. The fact that it is joined at the hip to the lucrative abortion bandwagon says it all. In partnership with MSI, which is the rebranded name of Marie Stopes International, it estimates that a third of UK women have had an abortion. What is even more shocking is that there is no limit to the number of abortions a woman may have. At over £1,700 for a late-term surgical abortion, that is equivalent to over 2 weeks' care for an elderly care home resident without special needs. Maybe I am just naive, but I thought the NHS was meant to save lives, not take them. The sad fact is that NHS has at some point undergone an initiation ceremony not dissimilar to the cremation of care that was documented by Alex Jones at a Bilderberg meeting some years ago. Some would say that always has been the case with any socialist healthcare models. All I know is that my dying grandmother begged my mother not to let her go into hospital, and she nursed her to the bitter end, through a severe stroke. Somehow, more than 40 years later, I think this sentiment is even more pertinent now than it ever was. If the Guardian can openly admit that eugenics is the dirty little secret of the left, heaven help those who are exposed to the policies and strategies executed from behind the closed doors of the NHS behemoth, without the watchful eyes of relatives, or indeed, any effective public scrutiny. Eugenics, the skeleton that rattles loudest in the left's closet. Marie Stopes International. Copyright Rookwood 2021.